There must be a second man. I know there is. It's basic terrorism 101.
Hello, and welcome to Condensed Truth, the Essential X-Files podcast. I'm your host, Shelby.
And I'm Laura.
And this week we are talking Season 9, Episode 15, Jump the Shark. This episode aired April 21st, 2002. It was written by Vince Gilligan, John Scheiben, and Frank Spotnitz. And it was directed by Cliff Bohl, who directed some comedy stuff. Like, he directed Bad Blood.
Okay.
So, the plot of this episode is that the old foe of the lone gunman, Morris Fletcher, who we never met, uses Reyes and Doggett to get to them to find their enemy turned friend, Eve Adele Harlow, who is killing off professors. In the process, they uncover a bioterrorism plot and work to stop it. And yeah, so.
Is this an X-Files episode?
No, it's not.
Absolutely not.
It's not even pretending to be one, I feel like.
No, it's not. I was so confused when I started watching it because it, like, opens up with, like, basically a summary of the entire season of The Lone Gunman, I'm assuming.
Yeah, kind of.
And then it goes into the episode, and I'm supposed to know sort of the emotional weight of any of this stuff, and I don't.
Well, it also doesn't help, like, if you just watched The X-Files, you would at least know who Morris Fletcher is, and mm-hmm. that would help. But we didn't watch Dreamland.
Mm-hmm.
Good episodes. Yeah. We just didn't watch them. But, yeah. One, a couple of points up top. One, this is funny now. Well, I don't know why I worded it that way. Anyway, Michael McKean worked with Vince Gilligan and Thomas Schnauz on Better Call Saul. He plays Jimmy McGill's brother, Chuck.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's funny because this is their first meeting. Like, they worked in Dreamland and then he was on The Lone Gunman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a con artist, which, in, like, if you've seen Better Call Saul, is like,
perfect.
Chuck hates con artists. And so that's pretty funny.
That is funny.
By the way, The Lone Gunmen are like patriotic action heroes now, which is fascinating. You could blame some of this on 9/11, but also, like, the show, The Lone Gunman show, which aired before 9/11, famously, because the pilot did feature them almost stopping a plane from crashing into the World Trade Center. So, very famously, before 9/11, like, months, that aired in, like, March. But, it's funny because it kind of gives me this sense. I was like, we were both too young to really have a good grasp on it, but I get the sense that, like, America was a lot more patriotic or leaning that way even before 9/11.
I think so. I think we like to, I mean, 9/11 is such a singular event. It's really easy to categorize things pre and post, right? We do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think the patriotism that arose directly after 9/11 is very, like, specific, but I do think that there was sort of an already existing rise in, like, patriotism and sort of, like, national pride, nationalism, you know, like, in America. I mean, it's mm-hmm. always been there, but I think that the environment was, like, ripe for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. We also get a mention of my nemesis, Jimmy. My beef with Jimmy is that if the Lone Gunman wanted a fourth, they should have asked me. Why did they ask this annoying man? This annoying himbo.
He has the vibe of, like, a stray cat they just took in.
Like a dog.
Yeah.
like a stupid street dog.
Got fleas. He's kind of dumb.
Yeah, they quite literally met him because he was, like, coaching a blind football team. Like, American football. It was, like, he's just, like, a very silly guy.
Yeah. It was funny. In the intro, they were like, and they hired an intern. Like,
he was funding them. Like, in The Lone Gunman, he's funding them. Like, they lost Mulder. They lost their benefactor.
They found
and they get this dude.
Another sugar daddy. Yeah.
Yes. And we get the awful credits, which I hate.
Oh, God. Why are these credits so bad? I, like, wrote that down.
We, like, it's, like, jar you because it's, like, oh, my God, we're in the 2000s. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. It's, like, honestly, one of the biggest tonal shifts the show has ever had is, like, these credits. Like,
yes.
They're so weird. They're very 2000s. There's updated photo IDs, which bothers me.
Yes.
The only thing I like is that Skinner gets a little, he gets into the main title credits. That's the only thing I like, but.
Yes.
It's very strange.
A big shout out to Mitch Pileggi.
Yeah, you finally got there.
We're off and running, and we meet Morris Fletcher, and he's like a lech of a man. It's awful.
Gross.
Like him just immediately being like, oh, you can take the woman. I really don't care. Of course, like we find out later, this is a whole like, this is con from the beginning. But this being our first meeting of him being like, oh, no, it's fine. Just take her. It's I don't care. And it was a very funny way to get fired, though.
Yeah, that is a pretty funny way. I thought it was the first thing that I thought was weird was that they didn't shoot him. And then set the boat on fire. That's when I was like, that.
And then, that's yeah, not he how that somehow gets out of it.
Yeah.
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 Suddenly he's like in a room talking to like Doggett and Reyes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Suspicious.
But they do like helpfully. It's funny because like they helpfully tell us, even though like as an X-Files audience, we have met him.
Mm-hmm.
Like we do know that he's a man in black. Also, like, his companion's name being Brittany was just, like, so 2000s. Sorry if that's your 2000s thing.
It's not.
But I was just like, wow. And he was like, they're, like, you know, questioning him. And we find out he was trying to sell, like, fake UFO info to his employer who found out and was pissed at him. And then the way he gets Reyes and Doggett to not leave is by saying super soldiers, which is the big bad of season 9, and I hate them. It's annoying.
It seems so pretty dumb.
Yeah, we have sort of met the super I have, because I watched the season 8 finale, but like super soldiers are in that, and we did, because I think we got some of it when we watched Per Monum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit.
I think so.
Anyway. Yeah. So they're trying to find out the super soldiers are what are preventing Mulder from coming home. That's why he's on the run, because of the super soldiers. And so they're immediately like, okay.
Sorry.
Let's deal then.
I'm just imagining Mulder calling Scully saying, hey, honey, sorry, I can't come home tonight. The super soldiers
are
after me.
And then Reyes and Doggett come to visit the lone gunman, and it feels so weird. It's like seeing your teacher outside of school or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, what are y'all doing here? I didn't know y'all had their addresses, even though it makes sense, because, like, they've worked with them before, but it's just weird. Scully's nowhere to be in sight. She doesn't show up until, like, 5 seconds at the end. It's disorienting.
We'll get to it when we get to it, but I made a note about that.
And you know, they're like, hey, do you know this woman? We're looking for her. And I don't think they mentioned this at all in this episode, but the funniest thing to me is that Eve Adele Harlow's name is an anagram for Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's the running bit. It's like she always uses aliases that are an anagram of Lee Harvey Oswald. And they're the lone gunmen. It's very funny and cute.
Yeah.
So we find out her real name is Lois Runtz, which also, like, I think she's supposed to be a Latina. Like, Lois Runtz? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Anyway. And then, like, they're like, oh, she's a super soldier. And they're like, that's funny. They were just like, Who told you that? And so then we get like Morris antagonizing them. It's fun. It's fun that like they have a nemesis. Yeah. And that he's a man in black.
Yeah. That is funny.
He's like, I loved your newspaper. Because he would like in Dreamland, he would feed them like misinformation. They publish it and he'd get a kick out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he even has a line in the episode where he's like, do you know how many of these stories I dreamt up while I was on the toilet?
He's like such like the antithesis to the lone gunman. Like,
mm-hmm.
He's a con man. He's an asshole. Like, because like the lone gunman really aren't mean like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like not a good dude.
Honestly, the plot of this episode, I was like, I don't know if I was just in a weird mood when I watched it, but I was just like, I was not vibing with it. Like, I don't hate this episode, but I was just not vibing with it when I watched it.
Yeah, I feel kind of similarly. It feels so out of place, and that's because, like, it technically isn't an X-Files episode. I think mm-hmm. that's part of it. And then I think for me, it's just, like, not the send-off to the lone gunman that I think they deserve.
Do you want to get into this now? Hold on 1 second. My cat is driving me crazy.
He's a needy boy.
He wants to
boy.
Get up here. Yeah, he literally wants to come up here. You want to get up here? My desk isn't that big, but he's like, I need to be on the desk.
Yeah.
Come lay here then.
We can get into it now or we can wait till the end, but...
Okay, you know, I feel like these episodes at the end are just pretty loosey and goosey, so we're going to be loosey goosey with them.
Yeah.
And so I have some quotes from this. So Frank Spotnitz said, this episode almost never was because there was zero support for doing it. The studio was hostile to the idea and it was a constant fight to get the money and negotiate with the actors because they did not want to do it. So they canceled The Lone Gunman. Apparently the studio hated The Lone Gunman.
Yeah.
And so apparently, according to Frank, the only reason they got to make it is because they were killing the lone gunman off. And the studio was like, okay, that's okay.
I mean, that's the vibe that carries over into the episode is that, mm-hmm. like, I think that's why it feels so weird. Because, like, it just feels so half-baked to me. And this isn't necessarily... on the writers, I think. I think it's because they did just have to tie everything up and, like, they had to kill them somehow. It just, I don't know, it just didn't hit. Especially because in, like, the end where the, like, stupid fire alarm airtight door thing is down.
Yes. I was like, what kind of building is this?
Because that makes sense. It's like a hotel conference. But anyway,
what kind of security is this? Like, what kind of safety feature is it? It's like the room in which you pull the fire alarm will lock you in there
with the fire. Right, exactly. There's a lot of parallels between that scene with like them like putting their hand up against the glass and like Jimmy being there and being like really
which was
sad.
A Wrath of Khan reference.
Right. I was about to say, which is like, this is like very much like the needs of the many way out, the needs of the few are the one moment that happens in the mm-hmm. Wrath of Khan with Spock sacrificing himself to save everyone else. And that moment is very emotionally loaded in that movie. And it's really good that like to have that moment in this episode and it be kind of this sort of like, it's like, Froicky looked at the fire alarm and they all went shrug emoji and said, okay, we'll die. It just is very, it doesn't hit for me. It doesn't work for me. Felt very weird. It made me sad because I feel like they deserved so much better because I really like the lone gunman. Mm-hmm. And it feels like they were being written off.
Yeah. It's both fascinating because it does feel like a lot of the later seasons of the X-Files, mm-hmm. The thing you have to keep in mind so much is how much the studio started meddling or like even just the fact that the writers like a lot of this was out of their hands. Mm-hmm. Frank kind of regrets what they did. Frank is like, I think it was fine. Like, I liked the send off we gave them. Vince was like, maybe it wasn't the best idea. I don't think the fan liked killing, the fans didn't like them killing them off.
No.
But the actors, for the most part, were pretty happy. Dean Haglund was like, I'm just happy we got a final send off. I thought they were just going to unceremoniously send us off to the sunset. Like,
they at least got some.
It's fascinating. Yeah. And they got to be like the big hero. It's a big hero send off. Like, if it emotionally feels like it pays off, that's a different conversation. Right. But like, it is like a, you know, they died for their cause.
Yeah.
And I have thoughts and kind of like, because the Lone Gunmen, I feel like they've kind of, they really made them soft in a way. Like, it's fine. Like, I think of them as characters is still good. But like, you think of like the early Lone Gunmen and how paranoid and like how critical they are of the U.S. But now it's like, we're critical because we're the real patriots. And it's like, oh, I'm going to roll my eyes. Like, no. Like, I feel like the original Lone Gunmen were like, no, the whole point of this country is to do these awful things. Like, there's nothing to be proud about.
Yeah.
And maybe that's partially my projection as someone who is also critical of, like, my country. And, you know, I don't know. It's fascinating the way the show, like, the Lone Gunman show kind of has this idea of like they're doing this for good and justice, which I would agree with. I think that's what the Lone Gunmen are motivated by, but they do it in a very kind of interesting way, I guess.
Yeah. I think this is definitely a classic case of, like studio meddling. Like, this is one of the stronger cases where you can really feel it.
Mm-hmm. Also, interestingly enough, in that same piece where Dean Haglund, who plays Langley, was talking, because he actually, so the Ramones themselves are like big fans of the X-Files. And so they contacted him after and they were like, we cried when y'all died. And it was really sweet.
I loved the little Ramones.
The speech is so good. Yeah. Yes. That was so good too.
The shirt's great too. I love it.
Yeah. And he has this line. He also says, Dean says, I think someone sent a pig to the production office in L.A., to process the canceling of the Lone Gunmen.
That's funny.
Their fans go hard.
Yeah, I definitely feel like they did what they could with what they had at the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not satisfying to me because I think they deserved better, but they did get their, like, literally their heroes send off. Like, and they kind of set that up from the beginning. Like, people like that never die is literally talking about the three of them.
Exactly. Like that kind of setup. And it was great. It's also interesting because, so the show ended, I watched it in 2014. So I watched it at the end. My ending was, I Want to Believe, which we will get into next time, but they came out with comics before seasons 10 and 11 came out. So the comics were called season 10. And season 11, I think. So, interestingly, the comics, like, the Lone Gunmen fake their death. So they're still alive, and their bunker is, like, under their gravesite or something. they're bunkered under, like, their
Arlington National Cemetery.
Yes, and they're, like, doing hacker shit. And they're working for the FBI, which also feels very out of character for them, generally.
Feels out of character that they're buried in Arlington National Cemetery, too.
What the fuck was Skinner doing? We'll get to it. But then, like, the show, like, reaffirms that they're dead once seasons 10 and 11 came out. So I kind of like both. I kind of like how both exist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like how, like, they kind of are alive and also dead at the same time because they never die.
That's very fitting. I think that the comics, I like whenever there's those types of continuations of material. Like, I think the comics are, like, a good idea.
I kind of like the comics.
I feel like they're probably better than most of the show.
Well, so I haven't read them in forever, but they did bring back, why am I blanking on his name? Gibson Praise. He comes back, and so that's very fascinating, because I feel like we just, like, dumped him, and I feel like his whole thing is, like, very fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so I think the comic does some, like, interesting stuff with Gimson Praise, but the comic, like, can't capture the joy of Monster of the Week. So it's, like, very myth arc heavy. So if you, like, don't care about the myth arc, I don't think the comics are going to hit for you.
Yeah.
They do have some fun stuff. I remember there's, like, a in comics generally, I'm not really of that world, mm-hmm. but I know they can do like a lot of variations. And I know there's this yeah. one arc in the comics where they're like, what if Mulder got abducted and Samantha stayed and became an FBI agent and partnered with Scully, which is like very fun. It's not very long, but it's like, ooh, lesbians. Lesbians in the FBI basement.
Now that's the show I want to see.
Yeah. So, yeah, so they do some stuff with the lone gunmen about them like being hackers. So, and it's fun. I enjoyed it.
Fun. I do like that they kind of get to be both, you know, alive and dead.
Yeah. And this very half-baked, like, Eve is collecting professors who study sharks who want to do... the motivation for this bioterrorism act makes... I don't think there is one. I think they're just doing it because they can.
Yeah, so...
And they want to.
There's a point to be made that all billionaires are scum of the earth. Yes. But, like, why do they want to commit this act of bioterrorism?
Yeah, and even if they said, like, we want to do this at a science convention.
At a bioethics science convention.
To, like, yeah, like, to, like, cripple the response to right. this huge attack. That would be interesting. They don't say that at all. Like, they just say, like, oh, by the way, he's like, it's three-card Monty. The one we were chasing isn't actually the one. We need to find the dude who is played by Paul Giamatti's brother. Is that John Gilnitz, which is the name they always use.
Yeah.
The John Gilnitz is played by one of the Giamattis. Also, their father was a commissioner of Major League Baseball for like a couple months before he died in office.
I think I knew that, actually.
I know. I was like looking them up for some reason. I was like, whoa, I didn't know their father was one. Whoa, he like barely served.
That feels like really familiar that their dad did something big with baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the, like, Eve doing all this weird stuff, and, like, the cartilage, like, being in their body, like, wouldn't their body reject that? Like, are they, like, on immunosuppressors to prevent it from responding? Like, so many unanswered questions.
The bioluminescence thing is also just, like, just there to be a cool effect, and
yeah,
doesn't make any sense either. Yeah.
They even say this in the bonus feature I watched where they were like, it was really hard to meld like the lone gunman, the show, which was funny and got to be a bit looser with the mm-hmm. X-Files itself. And also the fact that Reyes and Doggett are just kind of there. Like, they collect some info, but like they just keep showing up and like looking confused. And it's just like
they show up and they look like confused mannequins. They're just like standing there like, I don't know what to do. They're not, like, really, like, contributing much to the plot or to anything.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely felt the absence of Mulder and Scully a lot in this episode. Like, there's things that would have been brought up and said. Like, this episode would have gone so differently if Mulder and Scully were in it. Because Scully mm-hmm. isn't really even in it either.
Yeah, and I feel like even the fact that, like, Reyes and Doggett aren't going to joke with the lone gunman to say... same way Mulder would, like, that right. would have been a well for comedy that they just didn't have.
Yeah.
And also the very somber tone, because, like, at the end of the Lone Gunman show, like, Eve gets kidnapped, and we know this because, like, Jimmy was looking for her, the Lone Gunman went broke trying to find her. And so it's just, like, just so, like, sad and somber, and then, like, confusing and, like, disjointed.
Yeah,
but like a lot of that you cannot blame the writers on. No. It's just, it is what it is. So all things considered, I don't think it's that bad of an episode. With all these caveats, it's like, well, you know, it wasn't too bad.
I mean,
it could have been worse.
Studio interference really accounts for a lot when making TV. So like, yeah, I think that's the blame for a lot of the way it feels off.
Also, it was really funny that the lone gunman tried to stop Eve from killing that dude, and then like minutes later find out that dude is going to like do like a big messed up thing, and they're like, oh, sorry for interrupting you,
but murder is bad, Shelby. Okay,
That's the other murder thing when she's bad. Like, my father is like a drug runner and like a murderer and he funds terrorists. And then Jimmy's like, but Eve, you're a murderer too. It's like, oh my God.
He is so distraught that she's killed someone. Like, whenever he first came in and was like, I found her, I saw her, but then I found out she did something really bad. And they're like, what did she do? And he's like, she may have murdered someone. And he's like breaking down.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's hilarious to me. It's like, okay, like, sure.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, they do frame it as, like, a rationalization on Eve's part. And it's like, that dude is going to kill people. Like, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I do think murder's fine, like, in that regard. Like, I don't think you need to, like, you know, wring your hands over it.
It's that very sort of, like, liberal take of, like, but all murder is bad.
Yeah, yeah. We have to think of both sides. It's like, whatever. I do like that Frohickey got a last sick. Like, there was just something in his mind he, like, knew subconsciously he was going to die. And he's just like, I haven't smoked for 20 years, but you know what? I'm going to spark one up.
Good for
Morris,
him.
You want a sick. Like, they're so real for that, you know? If I knew I was going to die, I'd probably have a last sick. I've never smoked much in my life, you know, but...
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be really therapeutic. Like, a last meal kind of seems like a... be like whatever, I don't know.
Yeah,
I would be paralyzed of thoughts of like, what would I eat as my last meal?
Yeah,
but a last cig is a last cig.
Yeah, I've thought about my last meal a lot just because I don't smoke, and even if I was about to die, I probably still wouldn't smoke.
Yeah,
because I think it's gross. But personally, like cigarettes it is specifically gross. Are gross. But I thought about my last meal a lot, actually. And
okay, do you have one?
Yeah, well,
like, what kind of mood do you want your body to be in when you die? You know, like, you don't want to eat something too heavy because then you're like, I feel ill and right. Also I'm dying.
Yeah, and it's like, if you have your last meal decided, you can kind of like have some of your other favorite things right before your last meal, because then it's like multiple.
That's true.
Like the last time you're gonna have it. I've thought about this.
Okay.
Yeah, it changes though. I think I would want like a really, really good, like, deli dill pickle as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love pickles.
I had Firehouse the other day, and they gave me a pickle, and I threw it away.
Oh, I know. You always gave me your pickle.
Mm-hmm.
Aw. Yeah, so that's part of it. And then, you know, I really love pickled plum rice ball. That to me, like, people are like, oh, the epitome of Japanese cuisine is sushi. To me, it's a rice ball with a pickled plum in the middle covered in seaweed. That shit slaps. That is like really good to me. So that would be part of it. And then an udon soup, because it's my favorite soup. And it's like my ultimate comfort food. So, like, I'm not going too mm-hmm. heavy before I'm going to die here. And then
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of, like, a dessert. I think, like, a little lemon tart as a dessert. I really like lemon tarts.
Okay, I think I have mine.
Okay.
I've never really given it much thought. Mm-hmm. But when I say first, last meal, I think I talked about heavy food, but I think I have to eat a chicken fried steak.
Yeah. So
because, like,
that sounds good.
Yeah.
I'd be having that as one of my other meals a couple days before.
Mm-hmm. And I think if I was going to eat, I might as well go. Like, if I'm just bloated and everything when I die, it is what it is. So I think I eat a chicken fried steak and probably, like, a brisket sandwich.
Ooh.
Because those are my, like, two favorite foods from the entire world, I think.
Yeah.
And then, like, to drink, I would probably have, like, maybe, like, a prickly pear beer.
Yeah.
A Shiner prickly pear beer. Or, I don't know if I'd want liquor. I think I'd just have a beer, maybe.
Yeah.
Because no liquor is, like, I'm not wild about any cocktail in specific, but I like beer.
Yeah. Beer's so good.
Brett Kavanaugh voice. I like beer.
That sounds like a great last meal. That sounds very much what I would associate with you. I mean, chicken fried steak sounds really good right now.
For dessert, my first thought, probably because of the food I chose, was a banana pudding.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe some ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Something very sweet.
I'm like finally getting an appetite back again. And so I'm like thinking about food now.
I also like they find their three card Monty dude, which so it was very silly because like he's like three card Monty. They're like, I thought you didn't know anything about terrorism. And it's like, how do y'all not know what a three card Monty is? Like, I know this.
Is that a basic tenet of terrorism?
It's basic terrorism 101. She's like, there is another dude. I just know it. I just know it. Oh, it's so silly. So silly. Like, I think if it was, I feel like it needed to be a little bit lighter. Like, they needed a few more jokes, I think.
I think so, too.
I would be, like, a lot less frustrated. No, I'm not even frustrated, but I think it would work a lot better if they had a few more jokes.
I agree.
And so they, like, find the other scientists, and the speaker at the conference is actually the writer, Thomas Schnaus. So it's fun. I was like, I saw him, and I was like, I know who that is. And so they chase after him, and then lone gunmen find him. And as we talked about, they pull the fire alarm, which confusingly like locks them in a airtight sealed hotel situation. And RIP to them.
RIP to them. For real, for real.
In the arms of the angels. Yes, and we must talk about how absolutely uncorked it is to bury them in Arlington.
Yeah, okay, and then we cut to Arlington National Cemetery, which is just, like, insane. And Skinner got them in there somehow. I don't know how. I don't think there's any strings you can pull to make that actually happen, IRL. It's, like, the most ironic place Skinner to have. Bury these guys, like, ever. And then I literally wrote down, like, so you're seeing all these other people, like, at their funeral, like, they're cleaning up the, like, cemetery stuff or, like, folding chairs and whatnot. And I wrote down, I'm like, where is Scully? Like, I know she's still here because Gillian Anderson's in the credits. And then right after I wrote that down, they panned Scully.
She shows up and calls them, like, real American patriots, like everybody else in this cemetery.
It's so weird.
Absolutely unhinged. And Jimmy has, like, all three American flags under his arms.
Yeah. I like that the comic is like, no, they're actually alive and their bunker is underneath their graves in Arlington National Cemetery.
Yes.
Because that tracks more than them dying and being buried in Arlington National Cemetery.
And it's funny because, like, they did kill them off. The show says they're dead. They come back and, like, some like hallucinations or, you know, dreams. Visions and stuff, so like nothing like I'm physically here or anything. So they are like very dead, but it was funny because Frank Spotnitz is like, and you know, in the X-Files people don't really die, you know, and being kind of cheeky with it. And even Dean Haglund was like, or maybe when him it was one of the lone gunmen that was like, you know, like I think he said like level 5 containment coffins are supposed to be fit the size of the person, which I didn't know. And he's like, one of the lone gunmen, they're all the same size, and one of the lone gunmen is a lot shorter than the others, kind of like pushing this, like, you know, those coffins don't make any sense for how they died, and all of that for them to like actually be dead.
That's pretty funny.
Like, they had, like, I feel like even with all the like kind of retconning American Patriots shit they did to them, like, I feel like they had to, like, as characters be like, what the fuck? Like, why would you bury us there? That's crazy. If you told season one lone gunmen this, they'd be like, you're insane. Why would we want to be buried there with all the war criminals?
Yeah, I feel like in the end, it's an absurd ending, kind of a slightly absurd episode.
Yeah. It's, like, almost so over the top that it feels like a bit in some way. It's like, like, it does feel like they're faking their death in a certain way.
Right, it's so over the top that it has to be fake. Yeah, I think for me, in my heart, they faked their deaths and are still alive. Because that's just the more enjoyable story for me.
Like, even, it just feels so post 9/11 in a way that, like, the, it just, it's jarring. It's just like, whoa, hold on. But that's the episode. And we have our segments, which I realized after I, like, while I was watching it, I was like, there's no Mulder. Scully's in it for like 2 seconds.
No Scully either.
Yeah. All we have is our 90th moment. Like, literally.
Yeah.
That's all we have.
That, to me, I feel really sad thinking that Mulder's not there when the lone gunmen die. Like, on our sort of, like, last note to this, something that I wrote down that I didn't mention before, but I feel like Mulder would be there if he could. Like, should be there. Like, it's just really sad to me that they killed off the lone gunman without Mulder at all.
There's something, like, with that and the fact that, like, Scully gives up William while he's gone. He comes back, his best friends outside of Scully are dead, his son is gone, and, like, for what? Like, for what did he accomplish? Like, there's just, like, the X-Files at its heart is kind of, like, this very hopeless, like, grasping at straws kind of show, and I think as an audience, like, I can accept that that is what the show is and also get kind of frustrated because it's like, can I get a win? I just want one win.
Just a little.
I feel like they used to give us some wins, like early in the myth arc, or like just like some moments. It just felt like kind of cathartic. And this time it's like, there's no hope. Like, there's no truth. There's no answers. Mulder ran for his life and got very little. Like, I feel like nothing really changes. And he's lost so much while he's gone.
Yeah.
And he's left to contend with that when he does come back. And it's just like, it's so sad. It's really tough.
It's really sad.
Yeah. But for our 90s/2000s moment.
Welcome. You've got mail.
The very opening music with like the Morris Fletcher voiceover is incredibly like tacky. Like, burr, 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 burr. Like it really felt like so 2000s procedural. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels like they're copying another show. It feels like they're copying CSI, honestly.
It does have that CSI vibe. Absolutely.
Like, it was like, no, like, you're the progenitor. Like, you're the one that influences the other TV shows. It felt weird to kind of have this other, like, it feels like, that's not entirely true. They're, like, you know, copying other shows before them, but, like, I'm less familiar with them. But generally, they do a lot of really unique stuff. And so them copying another show was like, this is odd. I mean, it kind of bopped, but it was like, what is this music? They even play some of the Lone Gunman theme, like the... No, that's another thing. Anyway, but it sounds kind of like that. That's some Disney Channel show I just hummed, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
Was it Rocket Power? I think I did the Rocket Power theme.
You did.
Okay, what's yours?
Mine is the whole bioterrorism plot. It's like a very post-9/11... Anthrax. Like a very specifically post 9/11 terrorism plot. It's like one of those terrorism plots and shows, like shows all over the place were writing terrorism plots because, you know, you just had to say the word terrorism and then it was like, oh, spooky ghost type of reaction. Mm-hmm. So to me, the whole bioterrorism plot, it's like half baked. It doesn't really make any sense. It's just there to kill off the lone gunman. And it's like they just say the word terrorism because it's like a hot button word, you know? So to me, that was like very like 2000s post 9/11, like writing.
I think one of the lone gunman actors said, I thought they'd blow up in a bomb or something. That would have been fun. Yeah. I would have liked that. Like, they're like, we can defuse it. And then they're like, oh, shit.
That would have been kind of funny. Actually.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, like, just a very sudden, like, decision they had to make. And, yeah, it's, yeah. That was the episode. I really don't mind this episode that much. It feels kind of funky, but in a, like, in a kind of way that I feel like really fits for season 9. Because season 9 as a whole is just kind of funky. And so, I don't really mind it, but it's weird.
Yeah, it's... It's not the way that I would send them off, but again, I think I take some reconciliation knowing that they faked their deaths and are living in a bunker underneath their fake graves in Arlington National Cemetery being hackers. I like that.
Exactly. And yeah, so they come back as hallucinations in the season 9 finale. They come out as... well, like dream visions then. They come out as like hallucinations when Mulder is tripping in an episode from season 10, which is, the episode's really bad, but the scene where he's tripping is so fun to me. But like, you have to put up with like a lot of like Islamophobic shit before you even get to it.
Ew.
And yikes. Yeah. But then he's like tripping and like the lone gunmen are at a cowboy club, like a honky tonk. It's so fun. And then they come back for, I think Langley comes back as like a digital hiccup kind of thing. Like he uploaded his consciousness to a computer.
Langley would try to do that.
He would, absolutely.
That tracks.
And so that's it for the Lone Gunman. We bid them adieu, saluting my powerful boys.
Pour one out for the homies.
Yeah. I don't really have much else to say. Season 9 as a whole is... like, I was almost like, it's not that bad. It really isn't that bad, but it's just so different. It's, like, jarringly different. I don't think we're gonna have a bonus episode, so I was gonna see if I could shout out some episodes. Let me pull up the list real quick.
Yeah.
So, episodes from season 9 that I like... because I do kind of like... I wish I liked Doggett more. It's not his fault that he's not Mulder, but, like, you know, Robert Patrick's good.
I think that's just, like, a great summation of his character. It's not his fault he's not Mulder.
Yeah, and, like, he's skeptical. Like, he's a skeptic, and so, like, that's kind of, like, that's Scully's role. Like, what are you doing? It is what it is. I did like John Doe. I think that episode's good. Audrey Polly is good. We watched Improbable. People like Sunshine Days. It's not for me, but people like it. It's Vince's last episode, period, since he doesn't come back for the revival. But it's like his send-off, his like love letter for TV, and it feels like something I'd like more than I do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of funny. Like, it's the whole thing, it's like, this guy has like a superpower and he's like creating the Brady Bunch home.
Okay.
It's very fun and whimsical, and I don't know why I don't like it, but I don't. I think the Monster of the Week as a whole is like better than the Myth arc for season 9. I like some of the stuff I feel like we'll get into this when we talk about Improbable, which we are recording out of order, but... mm-hmm. Like, I feel like they don't really know what, like, Reyes and Doggett's, like, vibe together is. Like, sometimes it feels like they're doing some, like... I might be reading too much into it, but it feels like they're doing some, like, slight romance, and I'm like, she's clearly a lesbian, like...
Okay, even in this episode, whenever What's-His-Face couldn't remember the hot girl he had on his boat's name... she was so mad at him, like, so mm-hmm. mad, and like very, very based for being so mad. Like, he's an asshole.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, I already believe she's a lesbian just from that one interaction.
But it does have this very interesting and a completely and utterly believable vibe to me, where like Doggett and Reyes are both kind of in love with Scully, because I think she's very radiant, and I think like they both are very like, she's like, they feel pulled towards her because of that.
I mean, I get it.
And so, like, that's... yeah, like, that makes total sense.
That.
But then, like... yeah. Like, they're, like, both, like, oh my god, she's so beautiful. She's, like...
yeah.
She's smart as hell. Like, she's been working the X-Files for, like, 9 damn years at this point. Like, she knows all this stuff that they're, like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's, like, when Scully is in season 9, which she's not, like, a ton... it's just really nice, and like they're her best friends. Like, it's so nice to see Scully with real friends for once.
Wow.
So like, there's some parts of season 9 that I do really, really like.
Yeah.
But like, Mulder's not there. It gets kind of convoluted, and yeah. So I think as it stands, this episode is a good encapsulation for season 9. Like, you're really lost. It feels weird. But it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, that's season 9 to me.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else to add? I think that's all I have.
not really for this episode. I think we covered everything that I wanted to say.
So if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, we're Condensed Truth on Twitter. If you'd like to email us, we're condensedtruthpod@gmail.com. Again, if you want to say your piece about season 9 or season 8 or about the show as a whole, we will have a bonus episode. Our next bonus will be once we finish everything. So yeah, if you just want to say anything at all, I will give y'all a shout out if you email us at condensedtruthpod@gmail.com. I think you can also DM the Twitter account. You can also at me, because I might not notice it because I forgot that there was like another tab for DMs, but I have been checking them and I don't see any like pending DMs. So
yeah,
I don't think anyone's DM'd the account and I haven't seen it. So next time we'll be talking about The X-Files: I Want to Believe, the second movie that came out in 2008, was it, I think? Anyway, that'll be an adventure. We're gonna have Nick back on.
That'll be great.
And we're gonna talk about that movie. We're gonna complain about that movie. Yeah, so that's about it. We're almost done. We have the movie and then we have an episode from season 11. It's spooky. We're almost done.
That's crazy.
I know. That's about it. We hope y'all enjoyed this episode. If you have any opinions about whether a poll of, you know, should the lone gunman have been killed? Are they secretly alive? Sound off. Okay. See y'all. Talk to y'all. Bye.
Bye.